recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Oh, it's live, pal.
Today's guest is Curb Stomp Customs. This is the man that everyone should turn to for their logo, tattoo, or printed piece required to turn that custom figure from a 4 or a 5 into a perfect 10. Curb Stomp has created custom logos for thousands of people all over the world for years. My conversation with Curb Stomp Custom starts right now.
So Rick, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Great, great. Good to hear. Thanks for having me on tonight. Really appreciate it.
So Rick, where were you born and raised?
So I was born in Thailand. Not a lot of people know that, at least in the figure community. And I was raised in Arlington, Virginia. So my family immigrated around when I was about, 1 year old. So pretty much I've been in the U.S. since then. Pretty much Americanized since from the start.
All right. So you grew up in Virginia. Was there a wrestling scene out there, or what first caught your attention, or how did you get into wrestling originally?
Not really, at least the people that I grew up with or hung out with, it wasn't really, a lot of wrestling, whatnot, but it was not until I want to say fourth or fifth grade, where I met a friend that, a new classmate that actually just, transferred over, and he had actually was assigned to sit right next to me. And from there, him and I became best bud, and he pretty much was the one that actually introduced me to wrestling. And since then, I have been watching and I have been collecting since then as well. But never from the customizing, figuring point of view. That didn't start at that young age, but it was always collecting. And that was around, for me, would be around the Jax, the bone-crunching action figure time frame, right? So that era.
Okay. Man, that's quite a figure line to get into. I know there's a lot of people love it, a lot of people don't. But one thing that can't be disputed is just the sheer number of figures. There was so much going on. Did you get into the R3s and the Titantron Lives and all that after that?
So right after that, I started looking to the Titantron Live, the first series, right, the first wave, and I just disconnect from wrestling overall after that. That was around my high school years, right, from like maybe freshman year, and shortly after high school, I that was like a drought from 2001, I'll say, around up to about 2005. I did not get back into it around that time, and that's when the Ruthless Aggression came in, when those classic superstars from the Jax phase, right? So that's when I started coming back in terms from the collecting point of view. So I missed the whole, TTL after the first wave portion, and then the R3, and, when I had went back and did some research, I missed a lot of wave of that from that era.
I guess you kind of hit on the customizing part, and I think most collectors at some point get that itchy finger to take a shot at customizing. I know I did, but you took it a step further with these decals. Did you customize before you got into decals, or was that like right out of the gate?
No, customizing was never in my blood. It was always just collecting, right? It was just collecting, figure hunting, and just trying to get everything from that perspective. Customizing did not come till a little bit later into the Mattel era. I want to say around the Elite 19, Elite 20 timeframe. This was when, I was getting into, the Mattels, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm getting back into collecting, and it's just very addicting, right? And I remember clearly that I wanted an open heart. And I knew for sure that we're never going to get an open heart, right? And, right. There was a buddy of mine. Well, it wasn't a buddy yet, but I met a guy through one of the figure, Facebook group page. He had created a wrestling one, you know, a wrestling customizing figure website or group page on Facebook where he invited me to. There I met a young dude that did customizing. So I had pretty much commissioned a couple open hearts to him, and he was maybe, I want to say, at least 6 or 7 years younger than myself. He was 18 at the time. I was probably maybe like 25. And I was like, man, this guy is pretty damn good. And he's not around anymore, meaning I have not seen him in terms of in the figure community, the custom figure community, for the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years. But, you know, he was the one that actually got me into customizing. Not that he had been a mentor or anything like that. It was just the fact that, man, you know, why not try to customize something? But this was something that I had to learn, right? I mean, obviously when you start doing it, you're not going to be, you know, a professional right out the gate, right? So it was something that I had to learn, had to train myself. And, you know, after a while, I realized that, you know, I'm not that good in painting, you know, details, maybe base colors is good. You know, I can paint like a whole base color of black or whatever the color it is. But when it comes to details, I can't do it. Then I did some research, you know, research in terms of how these guys are able to paint these details. And, you know, it's the way how I see it is if you got it, you got it. If you have that talent, you have that talent, right? So, you know, I stumbled upon decals. And, you know, from there, I did a lot of research, a lot of videos. I had to self-train myself in using Photoshop, and it was, I'm still an amateur at it, but, you know, a lot of people think that I've come from that background in terms of, you know, customizing from the get-go or have some sort of like artistic, talent in the past. That's not the case. It's always been, you know, something that I had to learn and self-taught myself, right? So, you know, once I got in the hold of decals, I realized, look, you know, this is something that I can start doing. And then all these little small details, we can, you know, substitute with decals. The details with decals, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty much, you know, how it actually started. But it took years in terms of, you know, trying to craft, the perfect size, you know, to ensure that what works, what doesn't work, so it did take a long time to figure out that sweet spot, if I may say, to ensure that, you know, it works on the figure, right? So not everything works, but that's part of, I guess, my duty as the person that's selling decals to ensure that it actually works before I actually, you know,
a lot of trial and error, huh?
Exactly.
So Owen Hart was the first one that made you want to do a custom, and was that with decals or was that with the painting, or who was the first person that you did with decals?
You know, it's been so long ago. I think Owen Hart was what triggered it, but I don't remember if he was the very first one. But I remember him as being the first one that I had commissioned out to someone else to do it. And he did not use decals. It was all hand painting and all that good stuff, right? But, you know, Tim, I can't remember. It's been so long ago. But I do want to say maybe Owen Hart was one of those, the very first ones that I may have had used decals on.
The painting is nearly impossible for me. I mean, I try to get into it, but I'm awful at it. And I don't knock anybody else's painting because I realize how hard it is, but the decals are obviously, you know, you can't match that, the perfection of that. And tattoos are kind of the ultimate as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you got the logos and stuff for the gear and for the money in the banks, but those tattoos, when I saw those, you kind of hit on that. I thought for sure this guy's got to be some kind of a, you know, accredited artist through some college program or something, but you're telling me you're self-taught. That's really impressive.
Yeah, I'm definitely self-taught, and it's funny because a lot of these guys think that I have some sort of connection to these wrestlers or to whoever it is, right? And I'm one of those that I respect these wrestlers, and I don't reach out to them, or I'm not comfortable reaching out to them and ask, hey, you know, can you send me pictures of your tattoos or pictures of your attire? I what I usually do is, you know, I stalk them, you know, on Instagram. You know, I go through various photos and I just try to, you know, take a look at what they're wearing, and I just try to piece it all together. So that's pretty much how it is, that's how I do it, at least. I'm sure other people have their own ways and probably easier ways of doing it, but, you know, I like to challenge sometimes, you know, and the tattoos are, you know, I think the most difficult ones I've done so far was Brody King. And before that was Aleister Black, before he had his figure, right? And it was just such a pain. But, you know, in the end, you just feel that accomplishment, that you said, oh, man, I did it. You know, I was able to do something. And I'm not expecting it to. And I guess people should know that it's not going to be perfect, right? It's not going to be the straight, perfect, tattoos, but it will be at least, I want to say 90 to 95% of the time, it will be at least accurate as possible, but it's never going to be 100%.
Well said. And that, I mean, the tattoos that Mattel or whoever puts out, they're not exactly perfect either. So, you know, and they've got quite a machine behind them, and they're still, you know, like Randy Orton's tattoos to me don't ever really come out looking anything like, I don't know if that's a copyright issue or what, but.
Yeah. I think for him, it is. I believe I read an article that his tattoo artist, I think there's a young lady that pretty much, you know, filed a lawsuit with WWE, if I recall. But, you know, something along those lines. So I think you're right. I think his tattoo is going to look a little bit awkward moving forward in video games and even in the figure line.
They'll just smear some kind of design on there. You mentioned you've been collecting for all these years. Did you ever get out of it, or have you held on to everything that you've ever collected? Have you ever sold off your stuff?
Yeah, I want to say that, you know, going back to the bone crunching era, I had collected as much as I could. And I remember I had at least over 100 of those figures. I did stop, as I mentioned, during high school. And I don't know if I had ever sold those off. Maybe it just disappeared, or maybe my parents had tossed them. I don't remember. But I remember coming back after a while to the Jax, Ruthless Aggression era, and those classic superstars era, that I had collected a lot. And I did sell those off. I remember that clearly. And then I stopped maybe a year or two after that. And this was, you know, and then when the Mattel had taken over, I did not start collecting until around Elite 18 or 19. So I missed the first 18 waves of those Elites. And that's when I first jumped in. And then after that, I never turned back.
So how many figures do you think you have? I mean, have you've held on to those and you've kind of gone along? Do you collect Mattel Basics and Elites?
For me, I'm only collecting Elites. Basics, I don't. It depends on the basic. Rarely I use maybe, you know, their parts for, you know, customizing either the head scans or whatever it is, right? Arms, at least from the older basics, I would use, you know, their arms and take some pieces there. But I don't have basics in my collection. It's mostly Elites. And of course, you know, the AEW figures and these new New Japan Pro Wrestling ones.
And so when you create a custom, whether it be tattoos or the gear, what percentage of those are in your collection? Do you make a lot of stuff that you don't actually make for yourself, or everything that you make, are you putting it on the figure that you have in your collection?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in the beginning, I was making and customizing figures for myself. But Showstopper Customs. I don't know if you have followed him. He had made a good point when I was he was him and I used to be admins with on Wrestling Customs 101. I'm not sure if you heard of that group on Facebook. It's a really nice group that if you haven't, you should join. You know, you ask questions and stuff there. There's a lot of you know, veterans, customizers that will help you, guide you if you got any questions and whatnot. So it's a really great page, a group page for beginners and even if it's customizers. But for Showstopper's Custom, he had mentioned, or he made a comment or a statement at one point that he says he does not keep any of the customs that he makes, right? And I took that and I was like, you know, why is that, right? And he says, well, I make, if I recall, the conversation went like, you know, I make these and I commission these out to people, but I only collect whatever's, you know, factory or whatever, along those lines, right? And I took that statement and I told myself, you know, that's I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but ever since I heard Showstopper Customs mention that, I had start selling all my customs. I don't have that in my main collection. So whatever I make in terms of custom wise, I eventually sell them off. And it's usually used to model off the decals that way I can just put in the store. And once I'm able to complete that process, you know, I just end up selling them off and that's that. And I don't have any customs that are in my collection. It's all whatever is, you know, factory made from Mattel or Jazzwares or whatever company they are.
Interesting. Yeah. So when you sell them off, are you constantly thinking of, okay, I want to make this next? Or do people bombard? I'm sure people do bombard you, but do you listen to people bombarding you with suggestions or wanting certain guys or certain things made? Or is that something you come up with on your own?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's I'll answer it like this. There's a lot of people. I mean, I don't know if you've been to my store, but I have a lot of listing of everything, right? And it just so always happened that there's a lot of guys out there that don't want or need what I have listed. There's always something that is not in the store. So I do have a lot of requests or custom requests, if you say, commission, right? So I don't do custom figure commission just because my thing is that would take forever and it would not be fair to those that are waiting, right? And I know for sure that I do not want these guys to wait. I'm the kind of person that I would like to make sure the work is done in time, in a timely manner, and send it off, right? So that's the reason why I don't accept figure commission. However, custom decal commission, I do accept. And I do get a lot of messages. I would like to say daily, and it's always something that's not in the store. So I get requests based on that. And also I have a list of attires or tattoos that I have on my personal list that I like to, you know, get done. And then as well as whatever that's the major upcoming pay-per-views for any of the wrestling companies that are coming up, I have to be able to prepare for that as well. So I get a little mix of both. So I have my own personal list that I would like to, you know, that I tend to create. And I do get these requests from people that wants, you know, various things, right? People, independent wrestlers I've never heard of, or rising wrestlers that I've never heard of. And, you know, sure enough, I take those orders and 3 months later or 4 months later, this wrestler pops, you know, becomes big. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I already took care of that, right? So then I don't have to worry about that. You know, I've already done his tattoos. So, or whatever it is, tattoos or attires, right? So it's a little mixed bag there, but I do get requests from people. And that's how it kind of opens up many different options for me and what I can take and what I cannot take.
sounds pretty similar to my job, actually. When people ask me, I'll say, well, I have my agenda, what I want to get done. And then I have my boss's agenda, which always goes above mine. And then I have my customer's agenda, which goes to the top. So my agenda is always kind of there, but at the bottom. Sounds kind of similar with what you're saying there on the ideas.
Right, right.
Where did the name Curbstomp Customs come from?
So at the time, when I was really drilled in, right, it went through WWE, Seth Rollins was coming up. And what happened there was I loved the name Curbstomp. And he had that finisher Curbstomp, right, before it became the Stomp or whatever it's called now. And then at the same time, Brock Lesnar had his Suplex City catchphrase that he had shouted at one of the, I forget which WrestleMania it was. And, you know, and then Seth Rollins was a rising star, and he was getting, you know, he was already turning on the Shield. He was getting hot and all that stuff. And I said, you know, Curbstomp, you know, I kind of combined Curbstomp, and I said, why not say Curbstomp City? You know, with the same catchphrase of what Brock Lesnar did. And that's how I came up with the name, right? So it was a mixed bag of Brock Lesnar's catchphrase and with my favorite wrestler at that time. And I don't have a lot of favorite wrestler. And Seth Rollins was that person at that time. And so that's how Curbstomp City decals was born. And sure enough, I think a year later, you know, he cashed in, right? And he won his first title at one of the WrestleMania.
I was at that one out here in California.
Nice. Yeah, that was a good pay-per-view. That was a great WrestleMania, as I recall. But yeah, it was around the Seth Rollins as being my favorite at the time. I thought he was great. And you know, throughout the years, you know, I only had very minimal favorite. I you know, I was a Bret Hart fan, I was The Rock's fan, and AJ Styles and Seth Rollins. Maybe those are the only four out of all these wrestlers, all these eras that has happened. So it's I don't really have a lot of favorites. I do enjoy a lot of wrestlers, you know, a lot of these guys. But favorite wise, I would say those maybe will be my top four. From my side.
It's interesting you say that. I've been watching wrestling forever, and I've never really thought about it in those terms, but I don't really any longer have like a set of guys like, okay, these two or three guys are the ones that I really like watching above anybody else. It's kind of a level playing field, I think, these days.
Yeah. No, I agree. Exactly, right? It's a little bit different, you know? It's not the same as how it was in the past. You always have someone that you appreciate and you like during whatever era or whatever time frame it is, right? But you know, you start looking back and say, and you ask yourself, you know, who was your favorite? You know, is favorite the same as you enjoy at the time, or you know, it can play many different ways. So but yeah, I really didn't have a lot, and Seth Rollins was one of those new blood that kind of rised up, that, you know, let me just see if I can just take this name and just, you know, and just go with it, right? And sure enough, 2014 time frame, 6 years later, I'm still stuck with it.
You've got a Randy Orton figure I saw. I think it was is that the latest WrestleMania white trunks?
Yeah.
Is that a new decal set there?
Yes, that's definitely a new decal set there.
Randy Orton's been doing it forever, it seems like now, and I don't recall ever seeing him in white trunks before, but I thought the colors on those things just popped really good.
Yeah, you know, I think I think regardless of the color, the fact that he wore white trunks, I think it was just, we just had to do it. It was just something that was surprising, because it was always this black trunks with, you know, several different color scheme for however long, as you had mentioned, right? And I don't recall either if he ever had worn white trunks. So it was one of those where I had to immediately try to create the decal for it and just create the make custom figure of it.
you had like a WrestleMania sale on your site. It seems like you take care of your buyers, and every now and then there's some good sales that pop up.
Yeah, I try to, you know, it depends on, you know, pay-per-views or major holidays. I try to give back and you know, for and especially for those that are, you know, international, you know, UK, you know, free shipping and stuff like that. You know, I try to, you know, provide something where they can take advantage of something, right? So I always see it like the way how I see it is that they support me, and I try to give back in whatever possible, you know, that I can. So every now and then you'll see some sales, 30%, 35% plus free shipping. But it all depends on, you know, I try not to do it as often. I try to do it as often, but not as much. I don't know if that makes sense, but I hope that makes sense to you.
Absolutely. I bought several decals from you. I don't know, maybe 20 or so. I got pretty ambitious, and so I'm a big fan of your stuff, obviously. I haven't been too good about getting them done. And so I've kind of told myself, you know, no more until you take care of the ones that you bought, kind of thing. But if you haven't seen Srick's stuff, you got to check him out on social media, on his website, I guess also in these Facebook groups. And Srick, where can people find you if they're not familiar with you?
I'm always on Instagram. Instagram is, I guess, my bread and butter in terms of, you know, showcasing. I do have that connected to my Facebook site as well. So for those that are listening, I do turn off my notifications, right, for messages in both Facebook and on Instagram. So I don't get everyone's messages right away. And I do that on purpose because it would allow me to just go through my regular day-to-day operations in terms of working and you know, being with the family and all that good stuff, right? And then when I do have the time, I go back and check any all the messages. But you can also contact me on my email. I have listed on my store. And then I believe that should be it, right? So email, Facebook, and Instagram.
And so what is your Instagram handle for people who aren't familiar?
So the handle is Curbstomp City Custom Decals, and it's underscore on each of the, in between of each of the words. So curb underscore stomp underscore city underscore custom underscore decals.
One of the little segments I squeeze in, I like to ask my guests what they found collecting wise, whether it be in stores or online. What, you know, what wrestling figures have you purchased recently?
I bought recently were those Fan Central ones, which is the Adam Cole. Forget who it was in that wave. Is it Adam Cole and whichever one that came with Adam Cole? I'm just drawing a blank now. So that was the one from Amazon, and then don't forget which other ones that came with that wave. My apologies. The other one that I bought in the store recently was I was able to find the British Bulldog, that new wave, the one with the white trunk with his the Bulldog's gear. So I found a couple of those. I was very excited that it was just there in my local Target, which I really don't see or have anything in stock at that Target, and I was very surprised to find that. But I do a lot of my figure hunting online. Either it's Amazon or eBay. There's a seller on eBay that usually sells it within, you know, a couple price above retail that I usually go to. I do go to Ringside as well. I'm starting to just give up on figure hunting overall. I just never find anything, and it's just usually a waste of time and gas from my side. But usually whatever I find, I usually use it for parts anyways for my customs.
It's been that way for a long time out here, which you'd think California would have tons of figures. We don't. at least not in this area. But I have to say that recently, in the last, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks, I'm starting to see stores filling back up. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. It was months and months, I mean, through the whole pandemic, where you'd be lucky to find three or four new elites on the pegs. And now, I was just in Walmart this morning, and there was at least two or three cases of Elite 82 in there. So hopefully that pandemic had something to do with it, and we'll be back to happy days here soon.
Yeah, hopefully, right? I actually just moved to a new location as well, like 4 cities away from where I was staying at. So at least the Walmart, at least the last few months, on at least at this location, I have not been, you know, have gotten a lot of luck in terms of figure hunting, which is that British Bulldog that I was able to find at that Target, which usually never happen. So hopefully you're right, and moving forward that we should be able to get in a lot of stuff in stock and on the pegs.
I don't know what I'm going to do. I bought your British Bulldogs tights, and now I got the Mattel. I'll have to do a side by side, and maybe I'll use yours instead.
You know what you can do, just for you, Tim. You can go ahead and replace it. Let me know what you want, and I'll replace that for you. Not an issue.
Oh, you don't need to do that. I was just having a little fun with it, but I really appreciate.
I wouldn't want
that.
You to waste like regular figure parts just to test that out. So yeah, that would actually put me on the spot, right? So you know, comparing mine versus the Mattel version.
I'll do it low key. You know, I won't broadcast my findings. I'll keep it to myself.
It's all good.
I'm sure yours is going to be better anyway.
Yeah, but that's nice of you. But I think the Mattel version is pretty good. It's pretty accurate as well. So we'll see.
That's a really great figure. The only real nitpick I have is they made the boots too
tall. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand how they. Maybe there is a reason why they use tall boots versus the regular boot size. I just don't understand, what falls in that criteria, right? But, you know, and British Bulldog is not that tall of a guy. He was, 6 foot? And you have Hogan having, like, the high boots, too, which he was, like, he's, like, 6'7", 6'8"? So I just don't understand in terms of the criteria of what Mattel uses or when to use high boots and versus like the regular medium boot size. So that's a good question too. I mean, that's something that I had asked myself as well.
It seems like they just use a little bit more of a calf piece with a shorter boot, and it's pretty much a perfect figure at that point. And then you wonder if the Dynamite Kid will ever come behind it, but well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are using the there's a couple guys out there that have shrunken the Jax one, and you know, they're selling the cast on that. So I've seen a lot of people that have, you know, used the Bulldogs other, you know, just replaced the head and just painted the Dynamite Kids up and just pretty much pop it on. And it looks pretty cool. But you're right. I mean, hopefully we'll get a Dynamite Kid. I highly doubt it, but we'll see.
Speaking of putting you on the spot, this might be putting you on the spot or maybe asking you a little bit too hard of a question, but so I won't pin you down for just one, but maybe it's a handful of them. What are you most proud of in all the decals that you've done, or what comes to your mind as the ones that you're most proud of that you've done?
Let's just say it like this, all these harder tattoos that I had mentioned earlier, you know, anything with all those arm sleeves, you know, those guys with back and front, those would be the one that I'm most proud of. However, the older school guys where I don't really have a lot of reference pictures to go off of, and I'm able to still manage to create some sort of, you know, decals off of that. Any of those old school ones, you know, I'm really actually really proud of compared to even the tattoos. Tattoos wise, it all depends, right? But mostly the ones that I don't really have a lot of access to reference pictures or videos or anything where I can just go off of and still manage to create them would be the ones that I have been proud of.
Do you have anything you're working on right now? Got any stuff that coming up or maybe that you haven't even started yet that you can tell us about?
So there's several more WrestleMania attires that I'm working on. Sasha Banks, Apollo, Cesaro, and I believe a couple more. There's also some of the last AEW pay-per-view that they had. There's some attires there that I still need to you know, get back on track on, which I had stopped for a little bit there. Also, the New Day's Mortal Kombat attire, which I've been trying to get done. So that's coming up. And as well as for those that have submitted their custom requests, I am also looking at yours as well and those guys. So just if they're listening, I haven't forgot about you guys. So those are what I have on my plate in terms of the personal list and then additional to the ones that have submitted their requests.
Srick, I could talk to you probably for hours. I really appreciate everyone in the community like yourself that is a contributor of making stuff, whether it's the shirts, the belts, the decals that you're doing. I'm just a fan of all of it, and I definitely want to support you and everyone that does what you do, and I hope everyone else will check out your work on Instagram and give a purchase. Check it out. I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time. I said I'd not let it run too long. So kind of my last tradition that I do here on the show is I'd like you to pick any wrestler's entrance theme, and we'll play that on our way out of here.
The one that comes to my mind right now, I like Christian Cage's AEW theme / TNA theme. I enjoy his entrance theme.
Christian Cage, AEW it is. Rick, thanks again, man. Keep doing what you're doing, and we will talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it, and it was a great chat with you.
Take care, brother.
You too.
Before I get out of here this week, I'd like to give a thank you and some shout outs. First off, I'd like to say thank you to Srick, aka Curb Stomp, for coming on and talk to me. Super cool dude, making really good stuff. As I mentioned on the podcast, I've bought a bunch of his product. Haven't got as far as putting it on my figures yet, but I'm working up the courage to do so. If you haven't shopped with Curb Stomp, I can't recommend enough that you get over there and make a purchase. Good guy, and we should all be supporting those of us in the community that are making stuff. Shout out, Srick. Shout out to Dylan and Rob over at the Wrestling Figure Database website. Two awesome dudes that are putting in work for the community, and make sure you're following them on socials and check out their website. Give them feedback, help them put it together. It's for all of us, so let's all chip in and do our part. Shout out Dylan and Rob. I'd also like to thank the following podcasts, as well as shout out the guys who put them on. They've all inspired me and helped me, and I just want to say thank you, and hopefully you guys will check these shows out too. Shout out to my good friend Drew and his wife Caitlin Venzel. Tales from the Estate podcast is one fun podcast. If you're not listening to it, shame on you. What are you doing? Get over there and check these guys out. Drew and Caitlin obviously have great chemistry because they're married. And every married couple should have good chemistry. But not every married couple has an awesome podcast. These two guys do. Check them out. Shout out Tales from the Estate. Shout out to my good friends, Scott and Jeff, over at Fully Posable Wrestling Figure Podcast, the first wrestling figure podcast, the longest running one, and the nicest guys in all of wrestling figure podcasting. Yeah, I just made that award up, so maybe I'll have to look into an award show. Anyway, check these two dudes out. I do every week. Wouldn't miss them for the world. Shout out Fully Posable Wrestling Figure Podcast. Scott does it again with another podcast, Drunk Wrestling History, and this time he's joined with Eddie and Adam. This show's funny, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it shouldn't be missed. Get over there and support Drunk Wrestling History. Shout out Scott, Adam, and Eddie. Breaker and Bane's Power Hour. Don't miss an episode of this show, and neither should you. Breaker's a wrestler, and Bane is one hell of a rapper. And together they make a fun podcast that I wouldn't miss. And I don't think you should either. This week they had a special guest show up unannounced on their show. Tune in and check it out to find out who that was. Shout out Breaker and Bane. Speaking of Breaker, he's got a second podcast called You Know It's Fake, Right? Each week he's got a special guest on there dealing with the dirtiest word in all of professional wrestling. Guests come in from all different angles, from referees to crew members to podcasters to fans. Check them out. You Know It's Fake, Right? is an awesome podcast. Shout out, Breaker. Last week, Breaker assured the world that I was not left off his show intentionally. However, Bane chimed right in and assured everyone that Breaker had admitted it off the air that I was left off intentionally. I can't talk about it here on the air, but if you call me on the hotline, I'll be able to go into great detail with this exclusive voice recording of the conversation had between Breaker and Bane regarding my exclusion. Get your parents' permission before dialing and call me now at 1-900-A-CHAIRSHOT. Thank you for listening to Pulling Up a Chair with a Chair Shot. If you enjoyed it, please help put the show over by telling a friend and clicking the subscribe button on Anchor, Google, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. You will get instant notifications whenever a new show drops. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at achairshot. That's A-C-H-A-I-R-S-H-O-T. You will want to keep an eye on my socials in the coming weeks. Trust me. Feel free to leave questions or audio comments on the show page on Anchor FM's website or email them to me directly at achairshot@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in again, and until next week, Bobby.
All good things must come to an end, right?
Well, every time changes
everything. And a friend in need is a pest.